This morning, our gospel lesson is from John 13. You may follow along on the screen, or you simply may listen and hear the word of God. When Judas had gone out, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. And if God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and will glorify him at once. Little children, I'm with you only a little longer, and you'll look for me. And as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I'm going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." This is the word of the Lord. This morning, I have a new approach, a new effort with this sermon. I've entitled this, "The Best Way for Us to Grow." I want to start here. Between 1950 and 1972, I and my family were part of First Presbyterian Church, Fayetteville. This is an historic church. It's a church that had its bell melted down in the War of 1812 to support the cause of the United States of America. And so I couldn't find any pictures of the insides of this church. Couldn't find any pictures of Mel and Helen Thompson. Couldn't find any pictures of Ms. Nell MacArthur. Couldn't find pictures of Ivy Jernigan or Al Pruitt, Lacey Godwin, and the Godwin family. Actually, those are the people that was the church for me. This facade often is identified as the church. Well, that's the church. That's First Presbyterian Church, Fayetteville. That's where a lot of us grew up. That's where I grew up. But it's the people in the church that mattered most to me. In 1960, we were without a minister, and Dr. Rupert McGregor, who had been the president of Montreat Anderson College, he came to be our stated supply. And Dr. McGregor wanted First Presbyterian Church to grow, and we had a membership campaign, and the button of the membership campaign was, "I am one of 801. As a 10-year-old, I had not a clue what that meant. But I used to wear a button to school. "I am one of 801. No one ever asked me about it, but I was simply aware that this was our church's effort to grow. In 1972, my wife, my dear friend of a number of years, Georgia Ann Smith, and I got married. And we were married in her home church in Fayetteville, Highland Presbyterian Church. And we went to be part of Youth with a Mission, which was a youth movement in Europe. And it was kind of strange. My parents and most people that knew my family had never heard of such a thing. But it was a youth movement that sought to share the gospel of Christ. And so we went to Lausanne, Switzerland, and were involved with them, and were involved in a number of places in the world that we never would have expected to go, in order to share the cause of Christ, in order to share the gospel of Christ. We went to far-flung places we never planned on going. We were with them long enough that we realized we had done all we could, learned all we could, and we came back home. And after a time, in 1976, Georgia and I went up to Princeton, New Jersey, and I was in a course of study so that I might become a minister of word and sacrament in the Presbyterian Church U.S. That was before the Presbyterian Church USA was formed in 1983. And so in June of 79, I graduated from the seminary. And then in August 79, I became ordained as pastor at Cameronian Presbyterian Church in Rockingham, North Carolina. Now, I'm taking you down memory lane for a reason. It is to say that the life of the church has been rather important to me, and the growth of the church has been important to me. And for that reason, I have, over time, come to appreciate this painting by Ford Madox Brown. When I was in seminary, I discovered in Speer Library all kinds of artistic representations of God's Word, and one that I found was the English realist painter Ford Madox Brown, Jesus washing Peter's feet. This is precisely the account that comes just before this reading this morning. Just before Peter offers these words of instruction to his disciples, he takes an outer robe off and gets a basin of water and begins to wash Peter's feet. And Peter objects. He says, "Lord, you're not going to wash my feet. Then maybe you ought to wash all of me." And Jesus responds to him and says, all of you is not necessary for washing, but not all of you are clean. And he was referring to Judas. And then he washed Peter's feet and washed the feet of the other disciples. Somehow I find this painting, you may not see it because of the light, it's particularly graphic. And Jesus and Peter are very much focused on what he's doing. In all these congregations that I have served, all of them wanted to grow. And throughout my time in all those churches, I have increasingly understood that the gospel reading we shared this morning is the very best way for churches to grow. Here's the best way for churches to grow. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. Perhaps he was thinking about this foot washing. They were disciples who had been on the roads around Jerusalem, and their feet were dusty and dirty, and they were weary, and putting cool water and washing off the dirt, allowing their feet to affect their whole body, it gave them a sort of a new perspective on things. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. I hear those people. I've often heard of foot washing Baptists, and bless their hearts, I think they're onto something, but I think more than anything, this illustration is a metaphor, and it's meant to be a way for us all in the church to care about one another. Not that we have to go out and wash feet, but we have to take care of one another and love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Now, it's peculiar that he would say that. The world is going to know you belong to me by your love. More often than not these days, the world knows the church by its powerful preaching. The world knows the church by the loudness of the music or the grandeur of their singing choirs. There's some church, Georgia and I were involved in a church in Richmond, Virginia, that had a choir that employed folks, and their very traditional music was unlike anything we'd ever heard. And occasionally they would sing contemporary songs. More often than not, it was traditional music of a grandeur that should be in a concert hall somewhere. This morning I want to share with you this resource by John Powell, Catholic priest, who has written the book. This is a book a generation old, Why Am I Afraid to Love? And he speaks of several levels of communication. And I want to walk you through those because you and I are familiar with these levels of communication. Good morning, how are you? We say that to virtually anybody. That's a level of communication. The next level is one that we're familiar with also. How's your mom doing? I knew she was in the hospital, and I just wanted to ask, how's it going with her? It's a very polite and kind and caring thing to say. But often the church gets stuck in level two. Level three goes to the level of ideas. I would like your opinion about something. They've asked me to become a deacon or an elder in the church. Do you think I'm up to it? Or you know what's going on just now about guns and gun violence. I'd like to know your opinion about guns and what needs to happen in this world. The other night, we had a wonderful gathering here of 11 people who listened to one another about the matter of gun violence, and then we prayed for those families affected at UNC Charlotte, and we prayed for our nation and our leaders and the world. What's your opinion about gun violence? That's a level three conversation. Level four, according to John Powell, is I need to tell you something, and this may be uncomfortable. That is shared by only a close circle of people in our world. That's not something we share across the whole of the church or the whole of the institution. But there are people in your life and mine who will come to us and say, I've been wanting to say something to you for a while, and I just need to share it, and this may make us a bit uncomfortable, but it's important. And then level five is peak communication between husband and wife or two close friends. Now, this morning, I want to put something in your hand. And it is examples of level three and level four. So could I get someone to help me here? Could we pass those out? There you go. And I'll let those go out before we take a look at this. This is a page, front and back. One is level three suggestions, and the other is level four. And if you were here on Maundy, Thursday, you will have seen the level four phrases because it suggests a closer, deeper relationship. Do we have any? We've got some others up here. Who needs one? We have everybody covered that wants one. You all have it? Level two is often where the church lives. How's your mom doing? That's a wonderful thing to say. But there is almost no action following it. Dick Walker is someone who's been challenging the church in the session for some time, very appropriately, I think, for us to be people, not of just words, but of action. These ideas on this page puts into your awareness different ways that we may be obedient to John 13. Love one another as I have loved you. But if we're stuck on level two, then the level of relationships stays rather superficial. It can be warm and polite and friendly, and I think that's very important. But I believe Jesus is saying something to you and me. Love one another as I have loved you. And by this shall all know that you are my disciples. If it's such a big deal for the world, you and I need to take seriously these words far more than we often do. We think, okay, good sermon. He told a personal story. That's really good. I have a personal story I'm going to tell you at the end of this. But level three, I believe, moves us closer to what Jesus has in mind. We sometimes go here. You know that. You are a loving congregation, and you are caring people. And when we do, we build our relationships and make them stronger. And I've just given you some 30 different ways to love one another within the life of the church. But there's another level beneath level three, and this takes commitment. And we're not likely here yet in most of our friendships, nor do we have to be. But currently there are two groups, I believe, operating. We've said in the past we're a congregation of small groups. Right now there are only two groups that are really operative. And there's the opportunity for those groups to go to level four and for people to make commitments to one another and to consider a capacity for change. Consider open and honest communication. Consider looking at some reconciliation issues. Taking some quality time together. Sharing faith experience and being committed to mutual edification. Let's look at this passage again, because this is why we are commanded to love one another. When he had gone out, Jesus said, let me stop there. The context for this conversation is Judas is about to betray Jesus. You ever felt betrayed in your life? Of course you have. Live long enough, you will feel betrayed by somebody. Judas' betrayal of Jesus frames this whole conversation. Jesus is moving forward because he cares about these disciples devotedly. And he says to them, now the Son of Man has been glorified. God has been glorified in him. I believe that happened through Jesus' ministry. The days of Jesus' life on this earth, God was glorified in Jesus, and God was glorified by what he did. The healings, the instruction, the people for whom he cared, the people by the side of the road that he lifted up, God was glorified, and Jesus was glorified. And if God has been glorified in him, and God has, God will also glorify Jesus in himself and will glorify him at once. Now, these are hard words to explain, but I think they relate to our caring for one another. When you and I care about one another and do something like Jesus, we glorify God. It is God who is being glorified and honored and recognized and given attention to when you and I do what Jesus commands us to do. So why are we commanded to love one another? For the glory of God. Little children, I am with you no longer, and you will look for me. And as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. The nature of the disciples' life is loneliness. We had a meeting of the outreach team a number of months ago now, and none other than Terry Karam said to the outreach team, you know, in Huntersville, there's a real issue of loneliness. And people are lonely here, and I think they're lonely everywhere. Mother Teresa herself said there is an epidemic of loneliness in the world. And Jesus is aware of this loneliness. He's aware of the world and the life that these disciples would have to face. I dare say there have been times that you were lonely in your life with all that you have, with all with which you've been blessed. Life can be lonely at times. And so Jesus says, I give you a new commandment. I give you a new commandment that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. Why we're commanded to love one another is for the glory of God, since we are alone and we need one another, but because this is Jesus' command for us. Just as I was talking to those two little guys about tangerines and what makes them sweet, when you and I obey what Jesus says, it does something to your and my interior. It makes us different, stronger, better people. And then Jesus says, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So when we love one another, it's for the benefit of those around us. You see in the translation of my slot, my laptop to this system, phrases have been pushed over. And so we love one another for the glory of God. Since we are alone in this world and we need one another, we are commanded to love one another because this is Jesus' command. We are commanded to love one another for the benefit of those around us so that we'll know we are his disciples. And so this is how the church will be known. So where are we in these five levels? We could be stuck in level one. Sometimes we are. We just say, hey, how are you doing? And that's it. but not true. How is your mom doing today? That's a very appropriate thing for all of us to say. I don't disparage level two. But I believe Jesus is commanding you and me to go deeper than level two, beneath, to the next level beyond just polite, caring conversation. Something that involves a commitment. Take a look, if you will, the ideas on level three. Now, you can argue with some of these, but take number three. Taking someone to coffee or tea gives you and me the opportunity to get to know them better. Or number eight, send someone a letter offering honest gratitude for what she or he has done. I don't know if you've given up writing letters at this point in your life. It's a pretty special thing to receive a personal letter from someone. But to say honestly, Billy Bob, here's why I appreciate you so much. Billy Bob needs to know those things from you and me. Or number 14, take someone to see a play or concert in Charlotte, or a play or concert in Huntersville, or in Davidson, or wherever we are. Certainly this list isn't exclusive, and Jen Hammond helped me with these, and so our corroboration put some of these on paper. But this is an effort to move more deeply into our friendships than, hey, how are things going with you? How's your mom doing? Level four, there are 10 ways we can grow more committed to Christ in a closer relationship. And the level five, I don't think Jesus is commanding us to go there. There's peak communication. Sometimes it happens among, I think often it happens among couples and among friends. And I'm put up there, when heaven comes down and glory fills my soul. That's God's doing, not always ours. But I commend to you these five levels, and I commend to you these ideas that we... And I know this is a different way to do a sermon, and you haven't heard me do anything like this. More of a, not exactly a lecture, but I put this information in your hand so that as a small, close, personal, caring congregation, we may go more deeply in our commitment to one another and to Christ. Because when Jesus was speaking, he wasn't talking to a crowd of 1,000 people. He was talking to 11 disciples. Those 11 disciples changed the world. I once heard that Karl Marx spoke to five of his friends, and he said to them, if we are serious about my ideas, we can change the world. And some people have said they nearly have. But you and I can change the world if we take seriously Jesus' command, love one another as I have loved you. By this shall all people know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. May God help you and me to love one another, just as Jesus has said, so that we can look like these two women, so that we can care for one another in the ways that Jesus has instructed us, commanded us. Let us pray.